Blacks began to grumble, feel threatened. They wondered if once again they were about to be passed over by those who'd just arrived. There's no denying that many blacks share the same anxieties as many whites about the wave of illegal immigration flooding our southern border. The number of immigrants added to the labor force every year is of a magnitude not seen in this country for over a century. If this huge influx of mostly low-skill workers provides some benefits to the economy as a whole, it also threatens to depress further the wages of blue-collar Americans and puts strains on an already overburdened safety net. For most Americans, though, concerns over illegal immigration go deeper than worries about economic displacement and are more subtle than simple racism. In the past, immigration occurred on America's terms. The welcome mat could be extended selectively on the basis of the immigrant's skills or color or the needs of industry. The laborer, whether Chinese or Russian or Greek, found himself a stranger in a strange land, severed from his home country, subject to often harsh constraints, forced to adapt to rules not of his own making. Today it seems those terms no longer apply. Immigrants are entering as a result of porous borders rather than any systematic government policy. Mexico's proximity, as well as the desperate poverty of so many of its people, suggest the possibility that border crossings cannot even be slowed, much less stopped. Satellites, calling cards, and wire transfers, as well as the sheer size of the burgeoning Latino market, make it easier for today's immigrant to maintain linguistic and cultural ties to the land of his birth. Native-born Americans suspect that it is they, and not the immigrant, who are being forced to adapt. In this way, the immigration debate comes to signify not a loss of jobs, but a loss of sovereignty. Just one more example, like September 11th, the bird flu, computer viruses, and plants moving to China, that America seems unable to control its own destiny. I attended a naturalization workshop at St. Pius Church in Chicago, sponsored by Congressman Luis Gutierrez, the Service Employees International Union, and several immigrant rights groups. About 1,000 people had lined up outside the church, young families, elderly couples, and women with strollers. Inside, people sat silently in wooden pews, clutching the small American flags that the organizers had passed out, waiting to be called by one of the volunteers who would help them manage the start of what would be a years-long process to become citizens. At one point, a young girl, 7 or 8, came up to me, her parents standing behind her, and asked me for an autograph. She was studying government in school, she said, and would show it to her class. She said her name was Christina, and that she was in the 3rd grade. I told her parents they should be proud of her. And as I watched Christina translate my words into Spanish for them, I was reminded that America has nothing to fear from these newcomers, that they have come here for the same reason that families came here 150 years ago. All those who fled Europe's famines and wars and unyielding hierarchies, all those who may not have had the right legal documents or connections or unique skills to offer, but who carried with them a hope for a better life. We have a right and duty to protect our borders. We can insist to those already here that with citizenship come obligations to a common language, common loyalties, a common purpose, a common destiny. But ultimately, the danger to our way of life is not that we will be overrun by those who do not look like us or do not yet speak our language. The danger will come if we fail to recognize the humanity of Christina and her family, if we withhold from them the rights and opportunities that we take for granted, and tolerate the hypocrisy of a servant class in our midst, or, more broadly, if we stand idly by as America continues to become increasingly unequal. An inequality that tracks racial lines and therefore feeds racial strife. And that, as the country becomes more black and brown, neither our democracy nor our economy can long withstand. That's not the future I want for Christina, I said to myself as I watched her and her family wave goodbye. That's not the future I want for my daughters. Their America will be more dizzying in its diversity, its culture more polyglot. My daughters will learn Spanish and be the better for it. Christina will learn about Rosa Parks and understand that the life of a black seamstress speaks to her own. The issues my girls and Christina confront may lack the stark moral clarity of a segregated bus, but in one form or another, Their generation will surely be tested, just as Mrs. Parks was tested, and the Freedom Riders were tested, just as we are all tested by those voices that would divide us and have us turn on each other. And when they are tested in that way, I hope they will have all read about the history of this country and will recognize they have been given something precious. America is big enough to accommodate all their dreams.